some comments about Hubert Humphrey.
Yeah, I like Hubert.
I'm from Minnesota and North Dakota, so I would see Hubert Humphrey every once in a while myself. Yeah. But you did know him very well, obviously. Yeah. Describe him.
First of all, his appearance was different than what you'd think. My dad was so surprised that Humphrey turned out to be tall and lean, because he had a kind of a round face, and he photographed heavy and maybe dumpy. He was a tall, straight guy, and he was quick to tears, quick to laughter. Anytime he spoke, as somebody once said, he'd make two of the best speeches you ever heard. He'd make you laugh, he'd make you cry. He felt deeply about things. He'd let himself be used by Johnson, abused by Johnson, and he knew it. I was put in the strangest position. I was making a speech in New Orleans at a joint thing sponsored by Loyola and the University of New Orleans when Johnson announced he wasn't going to run. It came as a hell of a shock to me. I couldn't believe it. But it turned out to be true. And I got back the next morning to the office. Robert Kennedy had called and left word for me. He was in Pennsylvania somewhere. He'd already announced for president. I was with him at his house the night he decided to run for president, but I wasn't a part of that. I had already signed on to be chairman of an outfit called Town and Country for Johnson and Humphrey. That was at a time when Robert Kennedy had also endorsed Johnson for president, re-election. Anyway, Robert called me, and I tried to get in touch with him, and I never got him. He never called me back, and I think he just couldn't stand it. I mean, we were such close friends. At the same time, almost that same hour, Hubert Humphrey called me. He had been in Mexico. Johnson gave him no prior notice. That's the way he treated Humphrey. Humphrey said he wanted me and LaDonna to come have breakfast with him and Muriel the next morning at their South Capitol condo. So we did, just the four of us, and he wanted advice about where they ought to run. I was really hard with him. I said, people like George Meany and others, be sure they'll do it. You want to see the support, you want these people are talking about running, we'll see the money and make a really clear-eyed decision about this. We left, and I didn't tell him that I was for him. We got to the elevator. LaDonna was in tears. She said, we just seemed so cold. And I said, well, I don't think we should have told him to run. I mean, he's got to be careful about it. She said, I know, but it just seemed like we could have been a little warmer about it. But anyway, the next thing I know, Mondale called me and said, would you co-chair a campaign luncheon at Humphrey's? So that's kind of how I inched into it. He and I did down at, I think, the Mayflower Hotel. And then Mondale called me and said, would you fly with me down to Key Biscayne? Humphrey's down there on Dwayne Andreas's boat and wants to talk to us about being the national co-chairs of his campaign. And so we did and met with Humphrey. Mondale told me that he's going to do this in advance. He called him Humphrey. He said, now, Humphrey, do you want us to really run this or you just want us as figureheads? Humphrey said, no, I want you two to actually run it. Mondale said, yeah, you say that, but I've been in your campaign before, and you'll have two or three campaigns going. Humphrey said, no, I won't. I want you guys to run it. So we both agreed, but Humphrey did have some of his other kind of questionable friends, at least Mondale thought they were questionable, set up kind of a little separate operation, but we ran the main thing. We started from the first pressing Humphrey to break with Johnson on the war. Larry O'Brien and others have written about this. And we thought he was going to make a speech breaking with Johnson on the war before the convention. But he met with Johnson, and I don't know what Johnson told him. I think he told him that you're going to get a lot of Americans killed, and, you know, we're going to work this thing out if you don't screw it up. So he didn't do it. But at the convention then, my job, among others, I was in charge of the delegate operation. But also, Humphrey asked me to work up an anti-Vietnam flank, which was in the words that Ted Kennedy had given in a speech at Worcester, Massachusetts, called for unilateral withdrawal and bombing halt. My job with David Ginsburg, who was a lawyer in Washington, really good guy, was to go around and try to sell that first to Hale Boggs, who was chairman of the platform committee, and then to people like John Connally and Buford Ellington, the governor of Tennessee, and some other more conservatives. Hale Boggs said, well, you look me in the eye and you tell me that's Humphrey's position. So that's exactly what I believe. John Connally said, I can't believe that, but I won't oppose it. That's what he wants. I knew that Connally wanted to be the vice presidential nominee. And then Hubert Ellington said, okay, he'd support it. After midnight that night, Bill Welch of Humphrey's staff came, woke me up and said, the Johnson people have moved in here Hale Boggs, we can't find him. They're reversing these people on the Vietnam War plank. We have to come up with a compromise plank. I said, I won't do it. If you can't compromise this thing. You know, it's not the words. And I used a word I had never used before. I had to learn from Robert Kennedy. I said, this is the time for some moxie. They said, yeah, but Johnson will beat us. And I said, don't make a damn. I'd let him do it. We've got to stand up for what we're for. But Humphrey backed down, and I think that was a terrible thing. I more or less left. I was really sick of the campaign. Then Larry O'Brien called me later and said, would you join the plane, Humphrey's plane, and help us write an anti-Vietnam speech? Which I did. I joined him in Los Angeles and flew to Sacramento and then to Portland and then to Salt Lake. That's where we were going to do a national TV thing. People joined us on the plane from time to time, one side or another. We just had a running argument. We got to Salt Lake, the same thing. Humphrey's sitting in the middle of the hotel room with a swivel chair. He's just like a whirling dervish. I finally went to bed that night. Got up the next morning, went down there, and the argument's still going on. I think it was damn near 30 minutes before we had to get it on the teleprompter. The speech had three paragraphs that were mutually inconsistent. The first paragraph said, unilateral bombing halt with no conditions. The second paragraph said, but the other side ought to do something first. And then the third paragraph said, and if they don't, we'll just bomb the hell out of them. I just thought, this is just awful. We taped the speech, and there was about a five-minute delay before it went on network. We're going to watch it in the studio as it goes on. Humphrey went off into a little anteroom in the studio and called Johnson. He came back, he was just white. I can just imagine what. But it was too late. I mean, the damn thing's feeding. So I went back, not with Humphrey, but I got on a press bus. I just want to see what people are saying. Well, my lead is just the same old Johnson policy. Somebody said, like hell, that's a break with Johnson. But before I even got to the hotel, Ted Kennedy had come on. There's an AP story saying, okay, this is just what I was looking for, and I'm for Humphrey. That, I think, came across as a peace speech. And we had, as an afterthought, Larry O'Brien had put on there a kind of a tag thing about asking for money. And the money came in so rapidly it paid for another national television broadcast. I think that was a big thing, but it was very late in the campaign.